Blog Talk Radio.
Hermetic Hour. It's Thursday, February 10th. I'm your host, Folk Runyon, and tonight we're presenting a program on Afro-Caribbean and African magic. Its history, its philosophy, how it works, and where it comes from. Now we'll examine the similarities between the Goetia system and the Voodoo possession. We'll discuss other interesting parallels, including the use of facial reflection in mirrors, the astrological geomancy system called the Eyes of Na. We'll mention some personal experiences, and we'll touch on the dark side, discussing West African juju, the Koribra, Congo Dawa, Palomayombe, and by popular demand, of course, zombies and the similarity between zombies and vampires, and also the similarity between leopard men and werewolves. I'm sure that all of you goths will be interested in that. These are controversial topics, we realize, and we do not claim authoritative knowledge. We do promise you an interesting hour of discussion on a very guarded subject. So, as I said, tune in and learn about the Divine Horseman. Now, the Divine Horseman, of course, is the term that's the title of a book by Maya Duran, which is, I think, probably still the best book on Haitian voodoo, which is commonly called voodoo. And that's by Maya Duran, Divine Horseman. Now, what this refers to is the priestess or the priest, in this case, the mambo is the priestess, the papalai is the priest in Haitian voodoo, and they would, at the height of the ceremony, become possessed by the Ogun. And they would become, as in the terminology, the horse of the god. They would be ridden by the god. And, of course, they would speak oracular pronouncements, and they would deliver divine judgments and from a state of trance at the height of the ecstatic ceremony. So that's the reason for the title of the book, Maya Duran's excellent book, by the way, called The Divine Horseman. Now, this, of course, has had an influence on me and discovering or rediscovering how to actually make Western Solomonic magic, especially the Goetia process, actually work. The Voodoo horseman analogy was very, very important in that respect. Now, before we get into this, I want to mention that this is a very difficult subject to deal with. And one of the reasons is that Africa, you can't just say African mythology. This is almost an incorrect usage of the term. There are numerous numerous African mythologies, and there's a reason for that. Back in 1975, when I was in graduate school in Cal State Northridge in the anthropology department, I was in graduate school, and we had a symposium on mythology in general, different mythologies, and the faculty that were running this symposium, they divided up all of major mythologies in the world, and they had each one of us graduate students that was going to present in this symposium. We had to pick one. Well, nobody wanted African mythology. Nobody. Nobody wanted to touch it. And they didn't, boy. You know, they all knew I was a pagan anyway. So I said, "Oh, okay, I'll do it." You know, and they breathed a sigh of relief because here's this well known pagan. We already know he's you know Wild Woolly. So he'll take it. He'll do it. So I did it, and I wrote this paper. What I'm looking at right now, I had pulled it out of the files. It's called "Speculations on the Basic Structure of African Mythology" by C.R. Runyon. Well, boy, this is anthropolite. But however, I do want to read a little bit of this for one reason: to let myself off the hook on African mythology. And here we go. This is the important part. According to Blaise Cendars, there are 591 languages and dialects in Africa, 195 languages and 49 dialects for the Negro Africans alone. And that's not counting the five other racial groups: Hottentots, the Bushmen, and the Hamites, etc., etc. And that's quoting Cendras in 1927. It's hardly necessary to argue the point that such a vast diversity of language, go on the next page here, will be attended by a comparable diversity of myth and folklore. Tracing the cultural diffusion of myths via the comparison of linguistic cognates in the Bosian manner does not seem to have been much engaged in by ethnologists working in the African area. Perhaps this was made difficult by colonial rivalries prior to World War II and by political instability during the post-war period. In any case, good collecting has been spotty. There are other factors that might be termed cultural, which also bear on the problem. The native Africans' penchant for secret societies, which control the tribe's rites of passage, and other meaningful, privileged aspects of the myth-ritual-drama spectrum. Although Jeffrey Perinder is doubtful whether the revelations of Ogo Tumeli to Griol should be taken as typical of African myths, he does not dispute their accuracy for the Dogon culture. I suspect that they are typical in the abstract, and by this I mean that there may be layers upon layers of secret meanings, interconnections, and interwoven correspondences behind most of the major African cultural myth corpi. If this is true, it is sad to contemplate that other sages of the attainment of Ogo Tumeli may be dead with their canons unrecorded. The above-mentioned qualifications kept in mind, we can conjecture as being typical of African myths. Perinder sums it well. Anyway, that gives you an idea of the problem we have when we talk about African mythology. Good Lord. I mean, these little tribes, all speaking different languages, and many of them illiterate, and in fact most of them. So everything had to be memorized and passed down. When you talk about Africa, what are we talking about? And then what we're dealing with primarily, and what we're interested in, is those African religions that were brought over here by the slaves. both into the West Indies and even into the United States and into South America. And those traditions, of course, where they came from, what their base is, and how they got reconstructed and blended in with Catholicism and all the various things that happened to them. So to try to say African mythology, God, you can't do that. I mean, you have to just narrow down to certain things and try to find out where they came from. So let's try to do that. Let's look at what primarily concerns us. Now, before we do that, let's dispose of a couple of other African things that don't concern us so much and get those out of the way, and then we'll get into West Africa. This is that where most of the slaves came from, and that's what mainly concerns us. So let's say over in Ethiopia, and I don't know whether you can properly call Ethiopians Negroes or not. They're Copts, but their religious background is they're Coptic and they're Jewish and they're also Sabaean. And a lot of influence from the Sabaeans in Yemen, and they were ancient star worshiping pagans or whatever. So Ethiopia is, and a lot of people don't know this, but they should. Ethiopia is the Tibet of Africa. It's the Tibet of the Western world. They have in those ancient monasteries over in Ethiopia, they have manuscripts over there that are more ancient biblical manuscripts. God, the Book of Enoch came out of Ethiopia back in 1773. James Bruce, sort of an earlier day Indiana Jones, he got away with two copies of the Book of Enoch, and the Ethiopian priests, a Coptic priest, chasing him, trying to kill him. And that was the first and the oldest version of the Book of Enoch. So that's Ethiopia. So that's an area that we're not going to be concerned with too much tonight, but I thought I'd mention it. And then we already mentioned Ogotemele and the Dogon. Well, now the Dogon are something very special. We'll discuss those before we get down to West Africa. The Dogon are a tribe down there in the South Sahara, right near Mali, or just south of Timbuktu. They're a tribe that are down in that thorn bush area, and they have an incredibly complex and a very sophisticated religion that has symbolism that rivals the Kabbalah. It's an amazing thing. And on top of all of that, the Dogon have in their creation myth two amphibious creatures that apparently came from a planet revolving around the double star of Sirius. Yeah, I'm serious. And the weird part about this is that the Dogon knew more about the astronomy involved in this, the double star Sirius, than they could possibly have known without a telescope, almost like Palomar. They would have had to have a really, really sophisticated modern astronomical telescope to know this, and yet they knew it. This is one of the best evidences of extraterrestrial contact we have, is the Dogon. Now, I'm going to mention that because that's an influence, of course, on the OTA, because I realized that the Omo, the Dogon's Omo, those two amphibians that came down and supposedly founded their religion, also relates to Awanos, the fish god that gave the Sumerians their wisdom. And that also relates to Vishnu in India, and it relates to Dagon in the Phoenician pantheon, which we use, and also Capricorn, the fish goat, out there in the zodiac. And so we incorporated this in the form of Dagon into our psychic center system and into our pantheon of Canaanite god forms that we use. So we probably kind of owe that to Ogotemele. And we were kind of joking before the show. Olga told me, by the way, if you really want to, get into the Dogone thing, Conversations with Olga Tomelli is a classic. This is by Marcel Griaule. That's G-R-I-A-U-L-E, French anthropologist. Conversations with Olga Tomelli. Olga Tomelli, oh boy, he was really, he was like a Don, he was like Carlos Castaneda's Don Juan. He has a wonderful wisdom, and he espoused the wisdom of the word, the power of the word. And he said, and he is kind of a dirty old man with the word too, because he said you could whisper the word into a woman's ear and you would help impregnate her so she would be fertile. Well, yeah, no, it's Olga Tomelli. Anyway, yeah, but Olga Tomelli got a lot more wisdom than that. Now, so we got out of the two non-West African things I want to mention here, and I want to get them out of the way before we get into, primarily we're concerned with West Africa, and that's that area. There's about 10 nations there, from Nigeria on through to on if you follow the map around that Gold Coast area, and there's Dominey, and then there's Sierra Leone, and there's Liberia, and there's Gabon, which we'll mention later, is just right next to the Congo. So this just sort of comes up around that West African area there. Those seven or eight nations, countries, were colonies originally, at least in the modern era. That's where the slaves, this was the slave coast, and this is where the slaves came from, and they were taken over to the West Indies and to the United States and to and even to Mexico. And there's believe it or not, there was a number of these slaves went into Mexico and into Latin America. Now, they took with them their religious traditions, but they had to do it by memory. This was memorized by the priests. And so we're kind of wondering what were the original traditions and that they brought over. Well, along that line, I'd like to suggest a couple of books, because you know, this is something that needs to be documented. If we're going to talk about it, Santeria, African Magic in Latin America, by Jean Gonzalez Whipler. I think this is excellent, and this book's been in print. I don't know, I imagine it's still in print. It's considered a classic in the field. Very, very well done, and a real inside look at Santeria. Now, Santeria is the Cuban version of Yoruba, of the Yoruba religion, and that comes from Nigeria originally, the Nigerian area. Let me explain something about that. The Yoruba, which is a large tribe, the Yoruba, their religion that Santeria is based on is primarily from the Benin, the ancient Benin culture. Now, the Benin culture was rather advanced. It really you can't call these people savages. You can't even call them barbarians. They were really advanced. They were, I would say, they were approaching the status of the Aztecs and the Incas before Cortez and Pizarro got at them. But they were in decline, and they had a king who was absolute ruler, and so they were in decline. And by the time the European colonists got there, they couldn't keep, their government couldn't get it together. So the colonists just rolled over them and took them over, and then of course once the European colonists got into West Africa, and of course they were pulling slaves out. And one thing we should mention about the slave trade, though, Not in defense of the Europeans. I'm not trying to defend the Europeans in this respect. But most of the slaves, virtually all of the slaves that were sold to the Europeans were sold by their own people. Or they were tribes, warrior tribes that captured the non-warrior tribes or intertribal warfare, and then they would sell the prisoners to the Europeans. But the Europeans got more and more control of the area. And as they did this, they tried to civilize, whatever that term is. They tried to civilize people, and they were successful in a lot of ways. They were successful in pushing Christianity as much as they could across West Africa. And so they marginalized. They tried to marginalize the local religions. Years ago, I had some correspondence over there in West Africa, and some of these little countries, they said, our religion has been just wiped out. You know, now the colonists are gone, but now we don't have anything left. And so I suggested to them that they ought to look at Haitian Voodoo and see if there's anything there they can get. So I sent a couple of Africans that corresponded with me back in the 70s. I sent them copies of Maya Deren's Divine Horseman, and now I understand that Voodoo is thriving in West Africa. Maybe I had a little bit to do with that. I don't know, but sort of come home to roost. And so Voodoo in Haiti comes from Domine, from Dahomey. It comes from Dahomey, and primarily Santeria comes from Nigeria, from the Yorubas. And once they got the slaves over here, the slaves, because they were supposed to be going to Christian church, both in Haiti and in Cuba, they kind of tended to want to blend their old traditions with Christianity. Now, more so in Cuba, more so with Santeria than in Haiti. In Haiti, they do have cognate. You know, in the Haitian Catholic Church, you'd have a picture of Saint Bridget or something like that, and then right down in the corner is the Veve of Rizuli or something like that down the corner. So you know that okay, this is Bridget for the Catholics, but it's Rizuli for us Voodoo people. Whereas in Santeria, which means the saints, they actually did make more of a blend in Cuba. They made more of a blend of the saints and the Orishas. Now the Orishas are the Yoruba god force. Okay. Now both Voodoo and Santeria, their idea of communicating with the spirits, their idea is the idea of the possession. The Santero or the in the case of Voodoo, the Mambo or the Papaloi, and in Santeria the Santero, they take on the form usually after some ecstatic ceremony. They take on the form of the Ogun. Of the Orisha, they deliver the pronouncement. They actually become the horse of the god, and this is something that we've just lost this in Western magic. We lost this during the Victorian era, especially when we turned our backs on hypnosis and said, "Oh, we're going to do that anymore." We lost it. We had it before that. We did a different kind of hypnosis. One thing I want to make clear is that when you start dancing and beating the drums and dancing. And this is a form of hypnosis. This is hysterical hypnosis. It definitely is. And so it's the same in a way. You get the same effect in a way as you would with the magician standing behind you, you know, in a like this, but that's a different type of hypnosis. But it's hypnosis. So this is they preserve this, and we turn our backs on it. We're so afraid of hypnosis in the Victorian era that we just said, oh no, we don't do that anymore. And the result was that their magic. Their divisionary magic of the Afro-Caribbean tradition is much more effective than I would say it's more effective than ours because we've recovered it. But in most methods of magic, it is. So this is something we owe. And also, too, I want you to think about the whole Vevey system in Voodoo. They have a signature. These Vevey's, these little sigils of the particular gods and goddesses of the Voodoo pantheon are so similar to the Galatia sigils. It's really it's almost uncanny. You look at Baal's sigil in the Galatia, then look at Ogun Badagra's in Voodoo, and see, I think I have that in the Solomon's Magic video. I show Ogun Badagris on one side and Baal sigil on the other to show you how similar they are, and this really is. Now, one of the things that really, really frustrates me, and I have to say this without mentioning any names, but there are some very good magical scholars, some very fine magical scholars, who actually think that we don't have any more spirits except in lonely places, way out in the woods or way out in the wilderness, way out there. That's where you got to go to find the real spirits. And actually, one of our most prolific and most respected magical scholars actually stated this. He said, "Oh, the demons—they're just not here anymore. They're way, way out in the woods, and they're way out in these deserted places." Well, that's ridiculous. We have more demons now than we ever had, and they're just as powerful and just as strong as they ever were. And you know, if I were talking to a Voodoo Papaloy or a Santera, he would agree with me. He would say, "Oh, of course." I mean, and this is why we owe. I think we owe a real debt to the Afro-Caribbean magicians because they show us how it. They showed us, or me certainly, and the rest of us that know. They showed us how it works. And they have no trouble grasping the power of the subjective, invisible nature of the spirit. To them, that's no problem. It seems to be a problem for some of our magicians. And they call me, and they call Crowley, and they call Barden moderns. Good Lord. We're not moderns. We're recovering something that was known in the Renaissance. It was done, and certainly our Afro-Caribbean friends certainly know about it and use it. So this is a debt that we owe to them. Also, now to get a couple of other things that we owe to the our African cohorts, geomancy. That system of geomancy that we use. It's very, very popular in West Africa. It's called the Eyes of Fana, and I got a call. Oh, you're on the air. Who am I talking with?
Yes, I'm Rob. Roberto.
You're what?
My name is Roberto, and I have a question in regards to, I guess, the differences between, I guess, the Western style of magic and the Caribbean style of magic. I guess my family, I guess a quick background, my grandfather was in some type of Western tradition. I'm not sure if he was a Rosicrucian or Freemason, but a lot of his reading materials was passed down to my mother, and I got a chance to read him at a young age. So I've been pretty interested on things of high magic and the Western style of magic. But within a few years, I was introduced, now as an adult, I was introduced to more of the Caribbean side, I guess, from my father's side. I'm Dominican, so there's quite a bit of a mixture in the area. So I was introduced to Santeria and Palo and the different styles of magic that they have there. But my question is, I guess, when it comes to merging them, they were pretty adamant into not mixing both of the, you know, beliefs or the practices. Is that something that, I guess, in the Western tradition, is that something that's discouraged or encouraged to do?
Well, which went down now? Did you mention Martinism?
Palo Mayombe.
Palo, now I have a friend of mine. We're not a close friend, but he's a fellow I know who is a Bolero. I tried to pin him down one time. I said, "Are you a Bolero Judaico or are you a Bolero Cristiano?" And he changed the subject. I don't think Boleros really want to talk about it too much. There's a good side to Bolero. I'm not trying to, you know, I think maybe they have a bad rap, but Palo Mayombe is very secret. I know some things about it, and there's some things about it I don't want to discuss, because you can understand that there's some aspects of it that'll be misunderstood. I don't know how far did you get into it?
Well, I started doing more Santeria than Palo, because Palo is somewhat of a side thing that's done in Santeria.
It's Congo. It's Congo. It's a Dawa. Santeria, as we know, is Yoruba, and Yoruba through Cuba, and, you know, and as we said, and you can relate that there's behind all of this is West African juju. Now, juju is, of course, the lower form. The Yoruba pantheon and all that is elevated above juju. Of course, juju is the popular magic of West Africa. And the popular magic of the Congo is Dawa. There's a Petro side to Vudun. And that's Dahomey. But the Petro side, they say, comes from the Congo. You know, the Rada side, oh, that's the good guys, and the Petro, and they even have different kind of drums. You know, the Petro drums are rattly and kind of grating on you, you know, and then the Rada drums are boom, diddy, boom, diddy, boom. They're nice and friendly, you know. You're familiar with that, aren't you?
Yes, but I guess my question is, when it comes to, I guess, practicing something like in Santeria, we have Elegua, for example, he's considered the great communicator. And then in Vodou, we have the same, you know, Papa Elegua, which is also, he also performs the same role.
Yeah.
And I know that in, I guess, the Western tradition or Greek tradition, we have Mercury, which performs the same role, or Hermes. Now, when it comes to, I guess, the different style, because I noticed when they channel Elegua, for example, he has a playful nature. But I've seen some materials from people who supposedly speak with Hermes.
Let me interrupt you, because we're going to this is going to go on and on and on if we don't define where we're at here. It's a fine thing, and I think we should all do it to see where are the pantheons, the different pantheons that we use, where they seem to go together, what's cognate. That's a good idea. But the best thing to do is to find your own system and do it. do your own system. Know as much about the other systems. Like with me, I spent a whole year sitting with the Tibetans and doing Vajrayogini. Well, I'm not a Buddhist, but I learned a lot. And the same thing with you. You could go through the Golden Dawn. You could learn a lot. But still, do your own thing. And become really good at your own system. If you like it, if it's, like old Don Juan said, if the path has heart, that's it, do it, if it's your path. But, how much is it going to do you some good to say, okay, well, Shango is the god of fire, and so where can we find, we can find Vulcan, and Hephaestus, and we can start stringing out Western counterparts to Chango. We could do that. But still, Chango is your god. He's your fire god, so use him. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I guess on my part it's just kind of confusing because I was raised to do more, the classic Catholic,
I know, and that's Santa Maria walks on both. You got a foot. More so than Budan, because as I say, the Budan, they don't make as close. They'll make a cognate, but they won't actually blend them. At least that's the way I understand it. You've read Maya Deren's Divine Horseman, haven't you?
No, I got to look into it. I've read
that book. I sent that book back to Africa. Haitian Budan is actually they're importing it back into Africa now, but I'm not trying to convert you to Haitian Budan. I'm just saying that's a wonderful book, and you compare that to your Santeria. I know you've read Marjean Whitler's Santeria.
Yes. When I got my warriors, I was into that.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, we got some other stuff to cover. Good luck, and just remember, study as much of the other systems as you, including the Western system. One thing I'll leave you with: the connection between the Western system and the European system and the Afro-Caribbean system. The little story here, while you're still on, they ask you a question. In Jamaica, they have a tribe of escaped slaves. They escaped way back in Henry Morgan's time, and they went back up into the jungle in Jamaica, and they reverted back to their ancient African way of living. They're called the Maroons. And, of course, they have recovered as much of their where they originally came from, I don't know, but they've recovered as much of their African tradition as possible. So this anthropologist back in before World War II, he got in with them, and he had lived with them for about a year and a half, and finally, what goes for Papaloi and the Maroon pantheon or culture. He took it into what goes for a humfo in their culture, his ritual hut. Took it in there, and he said, "Now that you've passed all the tests, now I'm going to show you the secret of my power." And he opened up this chest, and he took out this big book wrapped in silk, and he unwrapped it. And it was Dolores's great book of magic art and Hindu talismans and occultism. And what that was, of course, as you probably know, that was a direct lift from Barrett's Magus, which was in turn a direct lift from Cornelius Agrippa. So he would blend it. I mean, they were actually. And the sixth and seventh books of Moses, I think every Santero in the whole has got a copy of the sixth and seventh books of Moses somewhere. So a lot of penetration back and forth between the two systems. Okay, anyway, take care and be well, and we'll talk to you again. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye. Now. before we get another call here, I get to see where I'm at, on the abstract here. Okay. You know, I said we're gonna get into a little bit on the dark side here. I know the goths will like that. We're gonna be kind of careful though, because you know this is, we don't want to offend anybody, or at least try not to offend anybody. Now I want to make point out that there's a couple of things that, like, you know, there are various words that you don't want to say in anthropology, and one of them is Atlantis. As soon as you mention Atlantis, you know, everybody walks out, or you've got to walk out, one or the other. And the word, the whole mention of juju in African anthropology is just a word nobody wants to talk about. And also the Corebra, or the Human Leopard Society. Nobody wants to talk about that either. So we'll just briefly mention a couple of them. With juju, juju is the magical system all the way across West Africa, and the magical system that the shamans, what you would call the witches and the witch doctors and whatever, this is what they practice. It's called juju. Now, it is not to be confused with the religious, the pantheons of the Yoruba, which derived, of course, from that very, very fine Benin civilization, and the various higher pantheons. Don't confuse that. Sure, the juju practitioners, they have orishas. They call themselves a juju priest will call himself a babala orisha. But this is a lower form, but it's all over West Africa, and it's very, very popular, they make Seven Powers soap, and they do all kinds of stuff. There's an overlap, but I don't think it's really fair to say that Voodoo and Santeria are all derived from juju. I think that's kind of a mistake. The reason why we're going to mention the Corebra, aside from the fact that I like old Tarzan movies, and you know, we like to have, we like to see Tarzan chasing the leopard men back and well, and of course they chase Tarzan too. But the Corebra was a very real and a really, really dangerous cult, intertribal secret society that flourished back well before World War II, and even before World War I, it got started. And it went all the way up to after World War II. They finally hanged, I think, about 57 of them were finally hanged about 1947 or something like that. And by the 1950s, it was being put out of business. But the Corebra, or the Human Leopard Society, was really, in a sense, it was almost a creation of the British. And the way this happened was really an example of how not to administer a colonial, how mistakes that a colonial administrator could make. The Leopard Society got started back around the turn of the last century, around the 1900s, and they were a very peripheral group. But they started, you know, causing trouble, ambushing people and whatever, and doing what their thing with their steel claws and their leopard skins and all that. And the tribes in West Africa, the tribes got together, Sierra Leone especially, and the tribal chiefs got together and they, we got to do something about this. And so a group was started, an intertribal group was started called the Tongo Players. And the Tongo Players were a bunch of witch doctors and juju men who decided that they were going to get rid of the leopard men. And the way they did it was that they had very good intelligence system, and they would find out who the leopard men were, and then the village, particular village, would pay them, and the Togo players would come, and they put on a big ceremony, and they get everybody drunk on palm wine, they'd have a big, huge bonfire going, and then at the height of the ceremony, they'd grab the leopard men, they'd throw them in the fire. Well, this gets rid of the leopard men, and of course, then the chief pays them off, and then they go on to the next village. They do the same thing. So this way, they were at least in Sierra Leone, they were well on their way to wiping out the leopard men. This was being taken care of. It was all being taken care of until this British administrator visited one of these villages, and here's this this fire. And this big, the ashes of this recent fire, and here's all these human bones in the ashes. And he says, "Good Lord, what's this?" And the chief says, "Well, leopard men, we just had the Togo players here." And the chief was very proud of himself. And the administrator was horrified. And he said, "My God, man, you can't do that. You have to, if you have leopard men, you have to arrest them and bring them to Freetown, and we will try them, and if we find them guilty, we will hang them for you. But you can't do this." And then they went after the Togo players, and the British arrested the Togo players for throwing leopard men in the fire. Well, the result of this was that the Leopard Society, they became very, very powerful. So from being a cult, a little cult of psychopathic little hooligans that were just about to be wiped out, they suddenly became an international menace, terrorist organization, and they were bad. And finally, of course, they got wiped. So this is an example of really started. They wouldn't have even... been hardly even noticed if the British hadn't made that mistake. Now, the reason why I mentioned this, because I said I was going to mention the similarity between leopard men and European werewolves. We're in denial in our culture. We're in denial on this werewolf thing. We have this fantasy that, oh, you know, you can't help yourself, and the moon is full and even bitten, and all this. No. We started in Mongolia, and it went on all the way across that river of grass, all the way into the Carpathians. We have mentions of it in Herodotus in 500 B.C. in the Carpathian area of Transylvania, and we have Scandinavian mentions of it and all this. What we had was a wolf cult that was virtually identical with the Corrupa. And here we've been in denial on this, and this went, by the way, this thing lasted all the way up into the late Middle Ages. And this is something that we've all been in denial about. So the Corrupa is a perfect ethnographic analogy for that. So if you want to know, and I think, frankly, you know, what would you be more afraid of? Some maniacal fanatic with steel claws and a wolf skin or a leopard skin, or somebody that actually transforms himself into something? Both of them are just as dangerous. And the thing with it, so we also said we were going to mention zombies and their connection with vampires. Now, Wade Davis, he's a botanist. He wrote a wonderful book called The Serpent and the Rainbow, which was since made into a very fine film about the truth about zombies. And of course, it is true. And the zombie powder. And then, by the way, that obviously comes from West Africa. Dr. Drago, the juju man over there, had his boys out collecting toads and all to make this powder. So they do it. They do it over in West Africa too. But the zombie thing was thought for all the way up to just a few years ago that this was some sort of fantasy. Well, it's not. In fact, the powder that's made from Now, the pufferfish and the toad and various other ingredients, some of which are probably just put in for superstitious purposes, like ground up human bones and stuff like that, this powder really will put somebody into a state of suspended animation where their heartbeat isn't even detectable. And then they can, after a short period of time, be resurrected. Now, it's in Haiti today, it is a hanging offense to make a zombie. And so they did have them. In fact, they even had an asylum for them on a little island off the north coast of Haiti. And a yachtsman that I once met actually visited that asylum. This is back before Wade Davis wrote the book. So I knew. In fact, I wrote Commando X, one of my thrillers. I had real zombies in that book long before Wade Davis came out with his book. Now, the reason why this relates to vampires is this. During the 1700s, the middle 1700s in Europe, there was an epidemic of zombification. Now, we don't know why. We know whether it was ergot poisoning or what it was, but there was this epidemic of zombification, and people were being pronounced dead, they were being buried, and then after a few days, they would come back to life. They'd be inside the coffin, and they would you know, claw and try to get themselves out of there. Well, then they'd be dug up, and you'd see this horrible corpse, you know, with the blood all over them and everything. And that's where the whole idea of the corporal vampire comes from. Before that, the vampire was a silver wraith, an energy sucking ghost. This idea of the corpse that rises up out of the grave and actually sucks the blood of the living, this doesn't go back any further than about 1750. And it relates to this epidemic of zombification. And that's why, you know, how can the vampire be real if he can't see his reflection? If you can't see his reflection in the mirror, he's not there. So at least the people who wrote the stories about the vampires not casting the rebate, they knew that it was true. He's not really there. But that whole idea of the vampire being looking like and acting like a physical being and actually sucking blood, that doesn't go back any further than about 1740 or so with that. So that's the connection between the zombies and the vampires. Now, the debts that we owe to African magic, I think, are in recovering our magical system, are considerable. And I want to make it plain that Santeria and Voodoo, they're not evil. They have a but what they are is they are much closer to the earth and much closer to the functions of the earth and the animals and everything than Western Kabbalistic transcendental magic, which has tended to get away from the earthly process. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to get us back to that Canaanite pantheon, get us back to our original pagan gods, and so we can have our original pagan. Yet, you know, control them with the angels and all of that, so we can have more real punch and power in our magic, which the Santeros and the Papalois and the Mambos, they've got it. They've got the power, and they've taught us a great deal. I cannot understand why some of my colleagues just don't realize that just look and see where the magic is and see what works and understand what a spirit, a god, a goddess, a spirit really is. They're not, the floor is not going to crack open and demons are going to come up out of the pit, and the ceiling's not going to open up, and the angels aren't going to fly down. No, but a Centauro, a Papaloi, a Boko, they don't need that. They don't need that at all. They understand. They know. So why don't we? That's the point that I'd like to make. Now, right now, I have that number three issue of the seventh ray, the green ray, the seventh ray that we've been putting together for the last 10 years. 200 pages is twice the size of the other seventh rays. I just took it to the printers and got it into the print shop, and it should be back in about a week. And hopefully, I don't think it's going to be back by our next show, but it should be back in about 2 weeks at least, and then we'll be able to get that out. So those of you in the associate member program who have a coupon for the seventh ray, you can get ready to use it, because we're gonna have this. This out, and in this seventh ray, I have an article called "Dark Origins of the Werewolf Legend." Now, this is one of the things I wanted to mention. This is why I covered that tonight, because we have that article coming up, "Dark Origins of the Werewolf Legend," where we document all this and cover that completely. So, next week, we're going to return to astral projection with a new twist on astral projection, and we're going to give you some experiences and some techniques, and so I just want to leave you with the thought that African and especially the Afro-Caribbean magical tradition that has come over here has given us a rich and a very powerful example of what magic really is and what it really should be able to accomplish. And we should look at that very seriously. And we should study it as much as we study Tibetan Buddhist magic, as much as we study any other of these magical systems. This system really deserves a study. I'd like to recommend the books that I've used as source material for tonight, and that is Santeria, African Magic in Latin America, by Magin Gonzalez Whipler, Conversations with Ogo Tomele by Marcel Griol, and The Serpent and the Rainbow by Wade Davis. And also, I want to mention just briefly before we quit for the night, the substance, the psychedelic substance, iboga, which is a plant that's native to the right down by the Congo, Gabon, the little country of Gabon, is right down the Congo, and iboga is a psychedelic substance, a plant. There's a whole ritual that goes along with it, and according to what we hear, iboga allows you to meet and speak with the dead. So this is another area of African magic, which is very fascinating. Okay, we'll see you next week, and good magic.